Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Return by Kelly St. Clair, narrated by Esther Wayne. Chapter 1. Romy didn't feel insane. That was how she knew she must be. The other space soldiers on Orbito 4 didn't think they were crazy either. Romy eyed a tall man hugging himself, humming a wordless tune. Strange. She had no trouble seeing how the other occupants of Orbito 4 were three planets short of a galaxy. She straightened her shoulders further than they already were, and clasped her hands behind her back as she strode to a window. Black space, a lot of it, met her eyes at first. But inevitably, the only light in the blackness commandeered her attention. Earth. Their barren homeland, currently in the toxic throes of global warming, the reason the space soldiers were all the way up here, and not all the way down there.
Soldier Rosemary.
The deep voice behind her rang with command. She pivoted, snapping the heels of her standard-issue white boots together, and stood to attention. Yes, sir. The man in the lab coat ignored her, consulting his nano. His pale eyes flicked up, checking her platinum hair and blue eyes against the picture on the screen. She wondered why he did this. The doctors collected her 3 times a week for observation, and this man had personally escorted her to the lab many times. But she shouldn't question procedures. There was a reason for everything. Usually that reason was safety.
"Rosemary, formerly of Knot 27, he read. "Follow me."
Grief tore through her chest as she marched after the doctor down the stark white halls, and a familiar frustration began to simmer. Formerly of Knot 27. They tagged the words onto the end of her name like a title. It seemed cruel, though she knew they did it for the sake of efficiency. Couldn't they say, formerly of Orbito 1, instead? Unlike all the soldiers here, some or all of her Knot were dead. Some of the teams had only lost one Knot member before tumbling into insanity. Others, like Romy, survived as the sole remaining member of their team. Both had the same result. Batshit. The thing was, Romy couldn't remember her Knot at all. She couldn't remember anything beyond automatic functions. She woke 3 months ago with a gaping hole in her chest, and no idea why, until the doctors filled her in. Blown to smithereens during a battle with the Critomal, the commander told her. A battle Romy miraculously survived. She wished she hadn't. Not like this. Not when she didn't have her memories of them. Romy did have their names, though. The doctors gave her that much. Elara, Phobos, Deimos, and Thrym. 4 names to explain the emptiness inside. Sometimes Romy tried so hard to remember she felt her brain might bleed. Maybe if the doctor's explanation seemed real, she could accept her Knot were gone. Maybe then she'd remember, and the black hole inside her chest would be filled. But the frustration which bubbled every time the doctor said, formerly of Knot 27, acted like a block. The more they said it, the harder it was for her to accept the truth. The doctor stopped in front of the lab door.
Bulbous reporting for screening with subject Rosemary, formerly of Knot 27.
Romy clenched her teeth. None of the other insane soldiers went to the clinic any more than once a week. She averaged 3. Romy suspected the doctors tested her so much because she'd reacted differently to the loss of her Knot. The year spent floating inside the cultivation tanks should have wiped away all of her memories, barring 1. Her Knot. Not in her case. No. In her case, every single thing was gone. She hated it so much, but she understood why the doctors would want to research her difference. All space soldiers possessed a flaw. The loss of a member within a Knot rendered the other members insane. Repairing this mental flaw would greatly reduce the number of soldiers the Orbitos had to cultivate and harvest each month to keep their force at 4,000 strong to fight the Critomal. This had to be why the doctors showed so much interest in her. Then again, what did she know? She was bonkers. The white door retracted to the ceiling with a hiss of air, and she entered the pristine lab.
"Disrobe," the pale-eyed man said.
She clambered out of her white fatigues and settled onto the padded bed in her white underwear. Three more doctors entered the room and began to roll Meditech into place around her. They slapped electrodes onto her chest, arms, and legs. Romy grimaced at the red spreading out from beneath the electrodes as her fair skin protested the doctor's rough treatment.
"Nanos are fully operational," stated a female doctor.
Romy chanted the words at the same time. She could probably recite the whole script of this visit. Not like she had anything else to do on Orbito 4. Insanity gets old. Quick.
Her body wasn't the problem. The nanotech inside of her repaired any physical damage. Romy just wished they'd give her a task. Anything to stop her agonizing about the things she didn't know for 5 minutes. Apparently without a mind you weren't capable of doing anything other than operating a treadmill. Though she had found a way to help get through each dragging day.
"Thrym," she began. Her imagination drew up a picture of him as a doctor placed electrodes on her temples, catching the small hairs there. She'd created appearances, personalities and traits for all of Knot 27.
"Thrym, the joker of the group, blue eyes, olive skin. Whenever the rest of them were sad after losing comrades to the poachers, he'd break his back trying to cheer them up. She'd loved Thrym and the way his eyes danced, blue like Earth's sky. Occasionally he pushed the boundaries a bit much." She winced as an electrical current ran through her head. Sweat broke out on her forehead at the pins and needles in both temples. An acrid smell reached her nostrils. Was that from her hair? Romy returned to her daydream with renewed vigour. "Elara, tall, dark and beautiful, the perfect soldier. Deimos was her best friend. Together they were the stars of Knot 27, renowned throughout all 8 stations for their heroic actions. Romy was so proud of them, she thought her heart might burst." This left her and Phobos, the quieter members of the Knot. Identical in most ways, except he was smarter and she more reasonable. Romy smiled, ignoring that the pins and needles more closely resembled a stabbing sensation now. The burning hair smell grew steadily, overwhelming the clinical disinfectant in the room. Dr. Balbus frowned at the screen, tilting the monitor away as Romy tried to catch a peek. She pressed her lips together. The doctors never let her see the screen. Why was that? "Paranoia is a symptom of insanity, Comet Face. Still, it would be nice to know what they'd found so far. Just a hint? Maybe that would trigger her memories of them." A lump rose in her throat. If the Thrym of her daydreams were here, he'd probably make a joke to cheer her up. She blew a strand of chin-length platinum hair off her cheek. Her job, in the limited capacity she could contribute after the battle, was to help, not hinder. To serve and protect. If the soldiers could hold Earth for another 848 years, until global warming passed, they could return to their homeland. No more fighting back the black-shelled aliens trying to invade and colonize the planet. The Orbitos would blow their yellow guts up for good and retreat to their homeland oasis, Earth. Sure, waiting another 848 years meant being recycled in the cultivation tanks every time the space soldiers reached 35. Wiped, refreshed, updated. It was just a necessary part of it. No one could live for 1,000 years. Romy wondered if she used to care about going back to Earth. Without her Knot, she couldn't care less about the return, as long as some of the space soldiers got there. The deaths of her Knot had to mean something, after all. The pain had to be for a reason. She whimpered as electricity burned a path through her spinal cord, but a bright red colour flaring across the white ceiling stole her attention. The foreign colour saturated the pristine clinic. She blinked, flashing lights.
The silent alarm was going off. She lifted her head off the padded bed to peer at the doctors surrounding her. They'd paused in their work and stared at the red lights too, appearing as confused as she. The space station's speakers crackled to life. Beep. The sound cut off. The looks of relief from the doctors ended with it. Remy frowned. Beep what? Only the beeping of the Meditech disturbed the tense quiet that followed. The beep was her heartbeat, faster than usual. Remy remained with her head off the bed, waiting. There had to be more. The red light stopped flashing, and the walls of the lab returned to clinical, undisturbed white. False alarm? She rested back, slightly perturbed. She didn't envy the person who made that mistake. The commander would come down on the culprit harder than a meteor shower. Dr. Balbus shared a long glance with a female doctor, the one who liked to slap on electrodes extra hard, before turning to the other two doctors.
Flavia, Gallus, please report to the commanding deck and check our status.
The two doctors nodded, abandoning their screens. They departed with the telltale hiss of the door. Dr. Balbus returned his attention to his own screen, resuming his tapping. Watery blue eyes reading with riveted intensity. His gaze wrenched back to the front as a series of thuds sounded from the other side. A loud crash reverberated, and a sound that reminded her of a finger rubbing on a wet mirror seemed to slide down the outside wall. The sliding noise stopped. Romy lifted her head again, looking past her bare feet to the door 4 meters from the foot of her bed.
"Stay still," the woman snapped. She shoved Romy's forehead down. The back of her skull hit the bed with a bruising thump.
"Note to self, don't lift head."
"Seal the door," Dr. Balbus directed.
Romy wondered at the tightness in his voice. The alarm stopped. Only the High Command had the ability to do this. The Critomal sat 300 kilometers farther from Earth than their ring of space stations. The aliens couldn't have crossed the 300-kilometer gap without the station detecting them. At least, they hadn't before. Ever. The female threw Romy a withering glare to ensure she was keeping still and hustled to obey Dr. Balbus's command. Romy strained for any other hint of disturbance. An eerie calm filled the space. The electrodes and wires now felt like restraints, a barrier keeping her from being able to protect herself with a syringe or something. She closed her eyes and attempted to regulate her breathing. Everything is fine. There was nothing to... The space station rocked as a muted explosion emanated from the clinic door. Her stomach dropped, and she nearly sat before remembering electrode slapper's order to stay still. Romy held herself immobile, flat, eyes darting side to side, senses stretched to maximum capacity. Was that smoke creeping along the ceiling? Not the normal smoke from her burning hair. Real smoke. She was insane, yet Romy couldn't help feeling fire on a space station was generally a bad thing to occur. Unable to deny fear's curiosity, she turned to stare at Dr. Balbus, awaiting his order to evacuate. His attention was fixed on the door, the whites of his eyes showing his terror of something there. He scrambled from his seat, hands raised, stammering and babbling at nothing. Not something. Someone. Romy inhaled sharply as a dart appeared out of nowhere, sticking deep into the side of his neck. The doctor staggered and slowly keeled over beside the bed, sending a screen smashing to the ground as he did so. She jerked as his body rebounded off the ground before settling into unconsciousness. The Meditech beeped, high-pitched and urgent, snatching up her distress and telling the world about it. So much for playing dead. She took stock, her mind racing, frozen. At least 5 electrodes and their wires hung off each limb. Another 10 on her torso and 5 more on her head. Extracting herself in a hurry wasn't looking good. Heavy footsteps approached the bed. Several sets of footsteps, she realized. Maybe 10. Romy swallowed, palms sweating where they touched her bare thighs. A large shadow fell across her body, and dread settled heavy in her bones. A man dressed in solid black blotted her view of the white ceiling. A soldier, but unlike any she'd seen in her 3 months. Why wasn't he dressed in white? The man's face was clean-shaven, and as his scent reached her, she got the oddest sense of another time. She blinked into his soft grey eyes. With careful movements, the man moved the gun he carried over his shoulder and slung it across his back. The weapon was small and sleek, the polar opposite to the huge laser guns fitted on the space station. Who was this person? The man reached for her, expression impassive, though she noted a slight tremor in his hands. He spoke a single, hoarse word.
Romy.
Chapter 2. Her inside squeezed. Her voice failed her. She stared at the man. Grey eyes. And wearing black. Only commanders wore black. But the gun was foreign and clearly not Critomal. Romy listened as the people with him spread out through the lab. Screw it, getting into a spacesuit in the dark was looking pretty good right now. Romy threw herself away from the man, barely feeling 5 or so electrodes rip from her body. She rolled along the floor, the long white wires wrapping around her. She kicked, clambering for purchase with her hands. More of the electrodes tore away, their wires adding to the collection round her torso and legs. The wires slowly constricted her movements, until she was stuck. With a last effort, she heaved onto her back, and with a small huff, she stared up at the sleek man. He'd rounded the bed and stood above her trussed form. In her underwear. Romy frowned at the thought. Why did that matter?
Romy, he said again.
He raised both hands as the doctor had done moments before, except his weren't raised defensively. He was soothing her? Her eyes flickered over his black camo pants and T-shirt. The sleeves seemed to be cutting into his biceps. The group with him made to move forward, and he held a hand up to stop their approach. He watched her warily. Romy tested her self-made prison. Nope, not going anywhere. She huffed in irritation, asking, "Who are you?" It was impossible to decipher his expression, but his stare went on and on. "How did you get on board?" Romy twisted in her constraints.
"What is your name?"
the man said softly. Anger stomped through her. "You know it already!" "He called me Romy, not Rosemary." He held his breath. Romy eyed the other black-clad soldiers behind him.
"What knot are you from?"
The words were so quiet she barely caught them. She scowled at him, just a small one. She was, after all, at their mercy. Formerly of Knot 27. Even Romy heard the bitterness in her voice. Poacher poop. Here she was worrying about whether the man's sleeves were too tight when she should be making plans. She needed to get to the command deck and alert the other stations. The man's face relaxed. It hadn't been obvious his expression was tight until he did so. A wide smile spread across his face, though she noticed he brushed his face against one shoulder, hiding it from the others. He remained this way for several moments, just grinning, almost joyfully, in his own bubble. Then he reached slowly for the wires at her feet. Her body trembled as he unravelled the mess of electrodes. She squeezed her eyes shut against his nearness, turning her head to the side. The man continued his work, reaching the wires at the top of her thighs. Her chest rose shallow and fast. Head still turned, she opened her eyes and stared in shock at Dr. Balbus's body on the other side. Just unconscious, his ribs expanded in laboured breaths. With a last tug, Romy was free. The man reared back as she scrambled to a crouch against the wall. He stayed where he was, hands raised again.
"We have come to save you, Romy."
She ignored him. Were there more, or was it just this contingent of 10? "More," she guessed. 10 people couldn't overtake an entire orbito of 500 crew, even a mostly insane crew.
"We can give you your memory back."
Her body stilled as the words seemed to echo in her head. A desperate hope flooded her mind, so strong she feared it. Romy took several breaths and forced herself to reply. "How?"
"We have your memory chip," he said. "Your old one."
Questions gathered in her throat, bubbling up and about to explode. How was that possible? How did they have it? "This will give me back the memories of my knot." The man's eyes took on a shimmering quality, and he cleared his throat twice.
"Yes, Romy. You'll remember your knot. You'll remember everything."
The man with the eyes like the clouds held out his hand. Romy stared at it, large, calloused. It was just a hand like any other. After months of feeling dead inside, could there be such a simple solution? Could this man give Romy back the memories of her knot? She didn't want to trust him. She didn't dare to hope. Yet somehow, she did believe this person.
"Do you promise me I'll remember?" she asked hoarsely.
"Commander Atlas," whispered a man behind him. "The last of the shuttles are ready to deploy. Evacuation is nearly complete."
Romy dropped her eyes, trying to hide her shock. They were evacuating the Orbito. Who are these people and where are they from? More importantly, where were they taking them? Romy would have thought herself incapable of taking anything more in after the last 20 minutes, but as it turned out, she could.
The leader spoke again, his face firm and his eyes flinty. "Romy," he said, "your knot is alive."
"My knot is dead."
As far as her insane brain knew, dead people couldn't be undeaded. This was her sole thought as the man led her through the white halls of the station, out to the docking station, into a foreign and sleek spaceship. She wouldn't believe it. She couldn't bear it if Grey Eyes was lying, which he had to be. No, she wouldn't believe him. But she would go and get her memories back. And if he was lying about that, Romy had no idea what she'd do. The man led her to a seat and swung a harness over her shoulders, clicking and tightening the straps until they secured her to the seat. At least she had clothes on now, her regular white fatigues. For some reason, talking to this man was easier with clothes on. He crouched in front of her, staring. He'd done a lot of that in the walk here. Stomach flipping, she turned her face to the side, breaking his view of her. Moments passed before gentle fingertips touched the burnt skin at one temple. She flinched.
"I'll be back soon. Stay here," he ordered.
He had her memories. She wasn't going anywhere.
"Commander Atlas," a female with a thick neck interrupted, "we need to leave." "The Orbito 4 commander is in the transmission dock," he asked no one in particular.
The female answered,
"Yes, sir."
He nodded, already striding away.
5 minutes. Get ready to launch."
Romy craned her head to get a glimpse out the window of the vessel. The shuttle looked streamlined and powerful, kind of like the man with the grey eyes. Had these invaders taken control of all the Orbitos? She had no way of knowing. They had to be from another planet, though they looked surprisingly human. Probably a trick. She froze as a terrifying thought occurred to her. The invaders could be sent by the Critomal. A new ploy to get past the stations and colonize Earth. The parasitic alien spoke telepathically. Who knew what mind voodoo they could do? She scrunched her nose, thinking. The Critomal had beady yellow eyes. Wouldn't the man Atlas have yellow eyes if he were possessed by a Critomal? And the aliens had gross, bulbous brains. Their heads were literally 3 times the size of a human's. How would you get a brain that size into a human skull? Romy was sure you couldn't really stuff a brain into a small space without damaging the important stuff. Still, it was best to be prepared. She'd keep the theory on the back thruster. The man returned, directing the pilots with a few terse words. The pilot gave him a curt nod. He crossed to the seat next to her, strapping himself in before turning to her without warning. She swallowed a squeal, jerking to face forward. She shouldn't look into his eyes. Understanding dawned on her. That's why he stared at her so intensely. He was trying to take over her brain. The pilots began to exchange commands, flicking switches. The engines began to climb in response, and quiet settled in the craft as the pilots went through their final checks. With a nod, one of the pilots began to count down from 10, 2, 1. With a metallic clunk, the vessel disengaged from the docking station and drifted away from the huge white cylinder that was Orbito 4. Romy rocked inside her harness as they floated 50 meters away from the white space station. With a fire of the thrusters, the vessel rotated to face Earth. That's odd. With a second flare of the thrusters, the vessel propelled forward, slamming Romy back into her seat. They were losing altitude. Romy could see the gauge. She turned wide eyes on the man beside her despite her earlier theory. He returned the look calmly. These invaders couldn't be going where she thought they were going. That was impossible. "Where are you taking me?" she croaked, mouth dry. He tilted his head to the rotating sphere of blues, whites, and greens far, far below, and Romy fixed her gaze on the glowing orb. "Down there," he replied. "To Earth." Chapter 3. A strong shudder vibrated through the vessel. They were landing. Romy threw off the dregs of sleep and jerked upright. She winced at a crick in her neck, rubbing it before wiping at the drool on her cheek. Funny, she didn't remember falling asleep.
"We're here," said a gravelly voice.
She jumped. The man looked as fresh as he had when they left. He reached a hand across to unbuckle her, and she slapped his hand away, ignoring his amused look. Her eyes travelled over the scene through the window in front of her as the engines whirred to a stop. "I'm on Earth," she mumbled, voice thick. More accurately, underground, judging by the rock walls. They were in a hangar, filled with a mixture of the Orbito battlers and other planes and vehicles. But this planet wasn't livable. Had these people lived underground this whole time? 152 years in a bunker. There was being prepared, and then there was that. She couldn't even imagine how many onions they'd had to preserve. At least this meant the man wasn't a Critomal demon. Weak electric lights ran around the walls of the hangar, and lights hung from the ceiling as well. The space was huge. Romy strained forward, peering through the dull light to better see a line of her comrades from Orbito 4, marching single file through a set of double doors. Her breath hitched, and she twisted to look behind her at the occupants of the craft she was on. It was full of the people dressed in black. Why was she separate from the others? What was going on? It was something she should have noticed sooner. "I can't believe I fell asleep," she said, amazed. The man, Commander Atlas, rubbed the back of his head.
"We had to inject you with a tranquilizer just after re-entry into the atmosphere. You started yelling about yellow eyes."
"Oh." Romy studiously avoided his gaze, silently groaning as her cheeks began to heat. He pursed his lips.
"Atlas," a clipped voice called from the back of the vessel.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?